local Kyoto. Greetings, Kyoto and the rest of the world listening online. This is Glocal Kyoto Monday with your host, Alan, coming at you from 87 FM in Kyoto on a rainy day. Unless you're listening in podcast land, then look outside for the forecast. Today, our discussion, 1984. No, not the year, the book. And not so much the book as the theme. Violence erupting in the streets of America, protests and riots and all these demonstrations. Are these things an expression of free speech, or are they actually stifling it? Are people becoming afraid to express themselves for fear of violence? Stay tuned. Well, you know, American universities, I guess, have, at least in recent history, have always kind of been a place of free thoughts, places where people of varying views can express those views. After doing their homework, of course. It is school. Above all things, it is school, still. Well, at least that's how it used to be. Now, I'm told that England has something like this called Speaker's Corner. I guess people can go out there and talk about politics and religion and all this stuff. You know, they can do it live right there on a literal corner out in the street, and people gather and kind of listen. And so I know the internet is there, but the thing with the internet is that you can Google kind of puts you in a bubble, you know, based on your searches and the content that you consume online. It sort of directs you to where you think, or where it thinks you want to go. So I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, it's just kind of the way it is. And the danger, or I guess the negative side of that, is that you can sort of be protected from opposing views and opinions. And you're sort of surrounded by people who are like-minded, which gives you confidence in your views. The problem with confidence in one's views is that confidence in one's views doesn't necessarily equate to one's views being correct. So now we have this thing spreading to universities. This is the real-life version of the Google bubble, as it's referred to. On universities, they're called safe spaces, where only correct thinking and correct speaking is permitted. Who decides what this correct speaking and thinking is? Well, whatever social group controls the university at the time. But who the political group is or the social group at the time is not really as important as the fact that there is such a group controlling the narrative at the universities. It's supposed to be a place of free thought. Anyway, that's kind of how we got to where we are now. Right now, you wear the wrong hat or the wrong t-shirt, and you can be beaten, attacked, simply for expressing the wrong view, whatever that means. How does this happen? How do we get to a place where simply saying something can get you beat up or get your property burned or destroyed? How do we get there? I should say, how do we get here? Because it's not in the future, it's in the present. Well, it started because young people have been fed this myth that words can hit as hard as a fist. Words do not hit as hard as a fist. Anyone that's ever been hit by a fist knows this to be true. And if you don't believe me, you can do this experiment yourself. So try this. I'm an empiricist. I like to make my decisions based on empirical study, right? You know, just the facts. Just the facts, ma'am, as they used to say in that TV show. Go to a mirror. Look into the mirror next time you get a chance when you're off work or you're done with your class. Go home, go to a mirror, and call yourself a jerk or a loser or whatever, some kind of name, okay? Negative name. And then on a scale of 1 to 10, measure how much pain you felt. 1 being no pain, 10 being brought to tears. Next, as hard as you can, punch yourself in the face. Punch yourself right in the face as hard as you can, just once. Again, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the pain level. 1 being no pain, 10 being brought to tears. Now, because I'm an empiricist, I realize this is only a one-time experiment, so it must be repeated. Therefore, repeat this experiment 3 times a day for the next 6 months. After 6 months, gather all your data and objectively analyze it. I think you'll find that you'll come around to my way of thinking. And if you want a more neutral position, you want to take me out of it and you want to take yourself out of it, then simply look at the medical bills that you've incurred over those 6 months from punching yourself in the face 3 times a day. And I think you'll find that the words did not incur anywhere near as many of those medical bills as did the punches to the face. So obviously I'm being a little bit ridiculous here, am I? No, I think I'm not. Because if you really believe that words hit as hard as a fist, then obviously you're out of touch with reality, because this is how we got to where we are. When people think that words mean the same thing as action, they feel justified in doing physical violence to someone just for their words. Do you understand? When you are raised to think that words, there's no difference between words and punches, then when someone says something to make you angry, you feel justified in hitting them. And that's what we see in a lot of these demonstrations. We see people from opposing views, which we always have seen, but usually there's some yelling, there's some shouting, sometimes there's even laughter, fun debate. But now, increasingly, we're seeing actual physical violence. I saw a 15-year-old girl punch an old man in the face at one of these demonstrations. It was last year sometime. Punched an old man in the face. I couldn't imagine it, 15 years old, hitting an elderly person. But this girl did it. And she's not the least bit sorry. She feels justified. And what did the guy do to provoke this punch in the face? Did he punch her first? No. Did he push her? No. Did he even touch her? No. He was talking. And he said something she didn't like, so she hit him. And that's the danger of thinking that words are the same as a fist. They are not the same. And now we're seeing these riots. I'm sorry, the media calls them protests. Yeah, protests are not... I'll tell you, protests are holding up signs. Burning cars and attacking people, those are called riots. And for anybody who thinks that physically attacking someone for saying the wrong thing, or God forbid, thinking the wrong thing, what are you exactly hoping to accomplish? Is it your wish that everyone agree with you or else? Is that the kind of country you want? Fine. If that's the place you want to live in, then right now, enjoy your moment in the sun, because it's all yours. However, I just want to remind you that life is not a static thing. It's always in motion. And social mores change. Which means there will one day come a time when your views become the unpopular ones, and you will be the one on the receiving end of the exact same kind of violence you've put upon other people. Welcome back to Global Kyoto Monday with your host, Alan. Rolling Stone, Street Fighting Man. Thought it was appropriate for the street fighting that's going on back in the States. I shouldn't be laughing. It's not funny. And before that, Alice Cooper, Freedom. Perhaps my favorite Alice Cooper anthem. Everybody likes schools out in 18, but I think freedom is maybe my favorite. Definitely appropriate here. That song, of course, in response to the PMRC of the day, trying to censor the lyrics in songs, but today, there's a different kind of censorship going on. Perhaps a progression, because it is coming from that side of the political spectrum, the same side as the PMRC. Now, it's spilled from the records into real life, into the college campuses, where now speakers who have the wrong views and think the wrong things are attacked. Physically attacked, not verbally attacked. And the people doing the attacking demand safe spaces from verbal attacks. That's right. The same people who think it's okay to punch you in the face because of who you voted for or because of what you think or what you say are the same people who demand that you're not allowed to say anything hurtful to them because you're gonna make them cry. Amazing, isn't it? Kind of like, oh, I don't know, a child, perhaps? Isn't that how children behave? Right? They can't control their emotions. They cry, they yell, they hit, they smack, they bite. Until daddy comes in and corrects them. Well, right now, daddy's been kicked out, so the kids are running free. The loonies are running the asylum. Or are they? You see, there's kind of a conspiracy theory going around, and that's not to, I don't mean that in a negative connotation, I mean it in a literal one. Conspiracy theory. So this part of the show, we're going to examine that conspiracy theory. This topic is kind of an Orwellian one, because the theme is 1984 has arrived. We're here. People are literally afraid to express the quote-unquote wrong opinions. And some say that certain individuals, here's the conspiracy theory, certain individuals or groups are working behind the scenes, secretly funding these riots that we see. I'm sorry, protests that we see in the news. Did I say riot when I'm supposed to say protest? Now, I'm not saying I believe the theories, but I'm just kind of presenting them, and we're going to continue this show, the rest of the show, with under the premise that it is a conspiracy, that it's true, okay? Just for purposes of, you know, the conversation going smoothly. Now, do you think that these demonstrations are funded, or I should say instigated, by outside forces, or do you think they're truly spontaneous? Think about that for a second. Do you think these demonstrations you've been seeing on the news, these burnings at Berkeley and all this stuff, do you think this was really spontaneous? Or do you think that somebody was behind it? Well, as The Rock used to say, if I may paraphrase The Rock, it doesn't matter what you think. No, that's literal. Because the net result is the same. It doesn't matter what we think, I should say. The net result is the same because many people tend to be herd animals. They follow the crowd. They're incapable of independent thoughts. Or maybe they're afraid of independent thoughts. They're afraid they won't fit in. So they go along with whatever their classmates are doing. They follow along blindly just because an attractive classmate is doing it. Some hot chick or some buff guy. You know, so you kind of go along with the flow. Which means these demonstrations are not fueled by logic and reason, but by hormones and a lack of life experience, because most college kids have no clue what the world is really like. No clue. Now, many social experiments have shown that people respond to social proof, meaning that an individual might not physically attack someone on their own, but if other individuals are already doing it, then that individual is more inclined to join in. Doesn't mean he will. It just means the inhibitions are lessened. So the reason is that now he has social proof. He has permission to engage in that violent act. The people around him are doing it, therefore it's not abnormal. It's okay. You see this everywhere in life. That's how riots start, because the situation escalates, tempers flare, and all of this is multiplied exponentially because of the scene itself. You know, this is it's a surrealistic scene, right? Imagine a large group of people gathered in what is normally just a street. It's just a local street. But now, on this Wednesday afternoon or Saturday evening or whatever it may be, you got this large mob of people gathered together, and there's some charismatic speaker up there yelling from a megaphone or a microphone, you know, just riling everybody up. And this kind of sea of emotion begins, this tidal wave. And it adds up to confuse the individual brains of the people in that crowd, and they get swept up in it. And next thing you know, there's a breaking point. And it becomes okay to lash out. It becomes okay to attack. And God help you if you're on the wrong side of the vibe of the crowd, and if you're outnumbered. But wait a minute, we have police for this, don't we? Right? Police are there to protect us. Well, not so much. As we saw in Berkeley, windows are being smashed, things are being burned, firecrackers are being thrown at the building and at people, even at the police themselves. And the police really didn't do anything. Why? Were they afraid? Were they tired? Well, if you've been paying attention to the media stories over the past year or two, it's been especially worse over the past year, you've noticed that any act of violence done by the police to a perpetrator is met with skepticism, which, under normal circumstances, I would say is a good thing. Believe me, you don't want a police state. But it seems to be that we have found, if you look, a lot of these stories were untrue. So the stories get reported as innocent man attacked by police, and then later it's found, maybe the guy wasn't so innocent after all. But that correction is not on the front page of the newspaper, is it? It's somewhere at, C44, way in the back, where no one reads. And anyway, the damage is done. The seed has been planted in the minds of the public. And so much cynicism is put out there that when the people do see the correction, the few people that do see it, they don't believe it. They think the correction is made up. They think that maybe the police force is leaning in on the media. There's a cover-up. So people literally don't believe the truth, they believe the lie. And that's where we are. So the police are simply too scared to intervene, not because necessarily fear for their own safety, though that's there too, but that's always there. The fear is that they might use too much force, in which case they'll find themselves, individual officers could find themselves on trial for being racist or sexist or whatever-ist. Because God forbid that one of the protesters is of the wrong persuasion, right? Imagine that one of these police officers, a male, is struck by a female protester. What's he supposed to do? Let's say a female protester takes a bottle and smashes it against the police officer's helmet. What's he supposed to do? What's the reaction? Because you know if he hits her, the media is going to be right there to say, police officer hits woman. And then he's going to be lynched in the eyes of the public. So the best thing to do for the cops is just stay on the outside of the action, the very edge of it, just to make sure none of the violence within spills over into the rest of the neighborhood. That's basically what we've done to our police force now. They are no longer there to stop the crime. They're just there to sort of make sure it doesn't spread. But if you're one of the people caught up in the middle of it, you're screwed, because nobody's going to come in to help you. If you're just kind of you weren't paying attention and you walked into the wrong area, you're boned, friend. No police coming to save you. And you know, if this kind of violence continues to escalate, there's a potential nightmare scenario that could play out here. Police increasingly having their hands tied, but the public increasingly demanding more safety. That leaves only one option. The military option. And if that option is taken, then it's just about over, friends, because if the military comes into it, the U.S. Constitution is more or less out the window, because the military is not a civilian force. By law, yes, they have to abide by your constitutional rights, but in practice, if the situation got that out of control, there's no way they could do their job and uphold your constitutional rights. Their very presence pretty much negates it, because the military coming in to police people is pretty much prom night with martial law. It's your first date with martial law. And then from there on out, it's a slippery slope, because now the precedent has been set. It's no longer strange to have the military going up and down the streets, patrolling, maybe enforcing curfews. Once that becomes normal, well, it's over. How do you get back from that? Finishing up the discussion tonight, today, this morning, wherever you are, about these demonstrations, so-called, that are happening. And we talked about how it affects the people who have opposing views and all that stuff, but I want to finish here by actually talking about the kids themselves. And I say kids because they're in college, and physiologically speaking, their brains are not fully developed yet. I know we say 18, you're an adult, but come on, honestly, think back to when you were 18. Remember how stupid you were? So these kids are being influenced. And they're being used, I think. I don't know by who. I don't know if there is this conspiracy theory that we alluded to before, where maybe some rich, powerful entities are behind all of this. I don't know. Maybe it's just the media. I have no idea. But these kids have their whole lives ahead of them. And think about it, you know, this is what they're like, right? They're pretty they're easily influenced because they're not adults. The violence they do at these demonstrations could follow them for the rest of their lives, right? I mean, this is an age where they're idealistic and they view the world in very oversimplified terms. You know, think back to when you were that age. Do you remember? And they're frustrated with older people because they think that older people are too stupid and too slow, and they just, you know, why don't they solve these problems? It's so easy to solve these problems. This is how they think. And when you take kids of that age and fill them full of this stuff, you know, convince them they've been wronged by this and wronged by that, and then say, there, that guy did it. Well, now you can just do violence to that guy and it's going to solve all the problems. But the truth is, it isn't. Because that guy or that girl is a politician, and that politician will have Secret Service protection for the rest of their lives. The kids will not. Long after the politician that you don't like is finished serving his term, these kids might still be in jail for the things they did at these demonstrations. And when they get out of jail, what happens then? Well, one of my friends, who's a corrections officer back in the United States, tells me that the recidivism rate, that means people who go back to jail after getting out, is 85%. You know why? There are several reasons, of course. Some people are just habitual criminals, but one of the most common reasons is simply that you can't get a job if you have a criminal history. So you got to do illegal things to make a living. So whatever these kids do with these protests could follow them forever. Now I want to close by reminding everyone of a quote. I think it's attributed to Voltaire. "I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. We seem to have lost that.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Glocal Kyoto. If you want to reach us, you can do so via email. FM870@radiomix.kyoto. That's FM870@radiomix.kyoto. Thanks again for listening, and see you next episode.